welcome to another episode of Robbinsdale Revisited. The 1940s opened with a new hospital in Robbinsdale. Victory Hospital was a three-story building with 70 beds. Following many expansions, it later became North Memorial Hospital. In November 1940, Robbinsdale experienced the Armistice Day blizzard. A sudden drop in temperature and 16 inches of snow closed most of the city, and people who couldn't get home sheltered at City Hall, in local businesses, or with friends. But the 1940s were defined by World War II. Here in Robbinsdale, people volunteered on the draft board, participated in scrap metal drives, and experienced the rationing of gas and food. Many started Victory Gardens to grow their own vegetables, and they started the Diggers Garden Club in 1944. At least 29 people from Robbinsdale lost their lives in service during the war. Robbinsdale High School becomes a sports powerhouse during the 1940s. One of the school's first sports stars, Vern Gagne, excels in baseball, football, boxing, and, of course, wrestling. Now, president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie, will tell us more. Pete, what do you know about the 1940s?
Well, let's just begin with that decade. We've got, in 1940, Robbinsdale's got 6,000 people in it. By 1950, we've got over 11,000 people, so there must have been a lot of war babies. It was a big decade for population growth. At that time, Crystal has about 2,500 people in it. Some big things get built in Robbinsdale. Grazier Park is completed in 1940. Victory Hospital down there at Oakdale is completed in 1940. Highway 52, so there'd always been a road. There'd been West Broadway, and then below that was Lakeland. And then in the 1940s, Highway 52 gets built, and that's headed up toward Twin Lakes. So if you're coming out of Minneapolis and you're going north, you're going to go not through downtown Robbinsdale where West Broadway goes, but just down below it on Highway 52 until you get to Twin Lake. And then there was a highway department field office there because they were also building the Beltline and they were getting ready to run Highway 100, the Beltline, Lilac Way, across Twin Lake and build a little causeway there. In 1940, Captain Billy dies. It's also the same year that his publishing outfit brings out Captain Marvel, who says Shazam, and they sell the Fawcett Building that year. The Security State Bank changes its name to the First Bank of Robbinsdale, and the building stands until 1985, but Fawcett Publishing is officially out of town by then. They owned the building and were just leasing it. They had left town in about 1930. You get these great big fires in Robbinsdale, and one of them is at Howard Lumber, and this devastates the entire lumber yard. And there was Howard was still alive at the time, but his wife Alma went around insisting that it had to have been an arsonist. A tragic part about the fire is a couple horses that hauled the lumber wagon around perished in the fire. That was a big deal, and it was sad because the all the kids in town loved to ride on the Howard Lumber wagon. The guy who would take care of the horses and drive the wagon around always gave kids ride. And so the high school has got 166 kids graduate from the high school in 1941. The same year, you've got 143 men registering for the draft. So you get an idea of how big an effect World War II is going to have on this little community. In addition to the Howard Lumber fire, you've got a great big fire downtown that burns down the bowling alley and an ice cream shop and a little shoe store. Buses are added to West Broadway. We still have streetcars until 1948, but the bus service is added and you've got feeder buses that go over to the Minneapolis streetcar line, and Minneapolis is converting over to buses in the 1940s too. In town, we have a ration board and a draft board. And I've always wondered, what was it like to serve on the draft board? Were you loved if you were served on the draft board? Were you respected or were you hated? You know, I think of That's a Wonderful Life, and wasn't the bank president on the draft board in that movie? So I can't tell if these people were considered the people you didn't want to cross, or they were considered, you know, some of the fine upstanding citizens. I know that the ration board at that time was not just serving Robbinsdale, but there were 34,000 people that were served by the ration board, and they were rationing everything from sugar to scrap metal. The Volk brothers had made plans to open up a movie theater in Robbinsdale, and they announced the plans in 1944, and they were told that, you know, we're not going to build any movie theaters at this time because of the war effort. So they had to wait for a few years until they made another announcement about their big theater. So in addition to Captain Billy's passing, we have a few other people that passed away in the early 1940s. In 1940, John Bloberger, he was born in Austria and he came to Robbinsdale in 1894. He went to work for the Great Northern Railroad. He died at the age of 77, and he had been the village constable, and he had shot one of the bank robbers in 1920s. He'd been a commissioner, a chief of police, and he was one of the organizers of the Robbinsdale Volunteer Fire Department. He was a friend of Captain Billy, who was always making a teasing reference to him in Whiz Bang magazine. Also, Håkon Christensen, who in 1940, it was said that he'd been here for 75 years. He hadn't shot a horse in 19 years, but he passed away during the 1940s, and his little building there on West Broadway eventually gave way to a new bank building. But we lost our blacksmith in that decade, too. The Lions Club gets started in the 1940s, and our mayor for much of the decade is Mayor Roche, who also happened to be the bank president, and we kind of talked about him during the bank robbery. The big event everybody remembers from 1940 is the Armistice Day blizzard. So the afternoon temperatures on November 9th in 1940, you know, soar up into the 60s. And then less than 24 hours later, there's an intense low pressure stream, and it comes from the southern plains and moves across western Wisconsin. Basically, the temperature starts dropping, and you get over 16 inches of snow in downtown Robbinsdale that take forever to dig out. And you've got 30 to 60 mile an hour wind gusts. And it's said that over 57 people died in the state of Minnesota. A lot of them were hunters, and they were just out in their shirt sleeves, or they were froze to death in their duck blinds. And at the Historical Society, we have all these dramatic pictures of people shoveling out after the Armistice Day blizzard, and streetcars being stuck in the snow in downtown Robbinsdale. This is a time when the high school really starts becoming a more important part of the city. The homecoming parade is looked forward to every year. We've got a great big football field behind Robbinsdale High School facing the new Lilac Way. And we know that a couple of those homecoming parades went right down Lilac Way. We also had a lilac parade that is noted in our newspapers, but I've never been able to tell if it's the same lilac parade that goes through Golden Valley. My guess is they must have teamed up as one of our big sports stars arrives, and that's Vern Gagne. And Gagne had lived out in Corcoran, and his dad had owned a bar, and some of the family were farmers. And it just gives you an idea of how big the reach of the Robbinsdale School District, or we talked about the ration board serving 34,000 people, because Robbinsdale was just kind of the hub. So even though Robbinsdale's only got 6,000 some people, we seem like a bigger place because so many things are happening here. And Vern has come to school, and he was really wanted to challenge himself athletically, and he would run from telephone to telephone pole and time how long it would take him to run from telephone to telephone pole. And I don't know how many telephone poles are between here and Corcoran, but there's a lot of them. He plays baseball. He plays, he's on the wrestling team. He plays football, and you see him in the front page of the newspapers. At this time, the Robbinsdale Post becomes the North Hennepin Post, and you get a larger reach. There's a man named Sonneson who owns the paper, and they named the school Sonneson and District 281 after him. He just can't help covering Vern and all of his athletic exploits. Vern is just already very charismatic. There's no television, but he would have been great on television. And after he graduates, he goes over to the University of Minnesota. He plays football there. He does more wrestling. He gets onto the U.S. Olympic team, but gets disqualified before he can compete. And then he gets on the Greco-Roman team, and then the U.S. decides that they're not going to send the Greco-Roman team out. So he's on the Olympic team, but doesn't really get a chance to go for the gold. But when he gets done with that, he starts taking some pro wrestling gigs, finds he can make a fair amount of money. At one point, the Green Bay Packers offer to bring him on to the football team, but he decides he can make a lot more money wrestling and turns down that offer. You could say he didn't really live in Robbinsdale, but the coaches at the high school liked him so much, felt sorry for him because he was running all this way from Corcoran every day, and they felt like he was kind of not in the best home environment. I can't remember if his dad owned a saloon, but that was part of it. And so they put him up at the Robin Hotel here in town. And when we did a Wrestling Hall of Fame, Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame event here at the Historical Society out in the yard, Greg Gagne, his son, just talked about how he always considered Robbinsdale his home, always talked about Robbinsdale, had his high school letters, you know, in frames up on the wall and his old clippings from his high school days here. And every other person in Robbinsdale has a good story about Vern Gagne. The Robbinsdale Airport, which again was up there where Welcome Park is now, right across the street from Steve O's, which at time was the Ellis Log Cabin, which was a really popular little restaurant. It had opened up in the 1920s. There were a family of Greek immigrants, and they owned it for at least 25 years and just served the pilots that were coming in and out of the airport. During World War II, the airport's no longer used for, well, just basically guys with airplanes. It becomes the home of the Robbinsdale Civil Air Patrol. And this is, you know, maybe they've got 20 planes and they get up there and they fly in formation. And if the homeland ever does, you know, come under threat, they'll be there to monitor things from the air. I love the old pictures of these folks because they're all volunteers and they all put on military style uniforms. It's men and women, and the women are practically drowning in their uniforms. The blouses, I mean, the pants just look way too big and, you know, sort of one size fits all. The sad thing about the Robbinsdale Airport is almost every other person who has a plane out there and is involved in flying dies. We had the Chase family who owned the Hamburger Inn on the Main Street. Sam Chase was the cook and very gregarious, and everybody's got a story around him. He's, you know, remembered to this day, but he took his plane up and crashed it in Fridley, and it was just a tragic story. We lost him. There was another Chase that crashed into a house, and the house is still there. It's just across the border in Crystal, and that was a student that was just learning how to fly and her instructor. We lost a guy named Dover who had been flying at the airport since the 1920s, and it was about this time, the war is still on, so they didn't get far with it, and everybody was very proud of the civilian air patrol, but they start talking about closing this airport for a variety of reasons, and they're already looking at their next location up in Crystal, and that will eventually become the Crystal Airport. Our Diggers Garden Club gets started in the early 1940s, and of course they take care of the garden here at the Robbinsdale Historical Society and a few other gardens around town. At that time, they were growing vegetables to supplement our rations and to sort of help with the war effort, promoting victory gardens. As long as we were talking about the draft board, just because they gave so much of their time to volunteer to the war effort, we'll go ahead and just name a couple of them. There was Victor Hansen, Harry St. Cyr, who owned a flower shop, Jules Sessing, who owned a hardware store, Ed Schuler, who owned a sort of an appliance store that was on West Broadway for many years. And we had William Wolfe, Milo Milky, who was the high school principal. So it must have been odd knowing that your principal was on your draft board. You weren't going to be able to lie about your age. Harriet Heath was the secretary. Yeah, again, it's so odd to think of this draft board and how they got to make those decisions and who was called up and who was sent out. So in the other thing that people remember from World War II is right on the main street, there was a giant billboard erected, and it had room for 300 stars. The idea was your name went up there with a blue star when you shipped out, and if you were killed in action, your star turned gold. Edith Robbins, who was serving on the school board at the time, she'd been on there for 24 years, and unfortunately, she's another one that we lost in 1945. She was hit by a truck crossing a street, but she wrote a little poem about the billboard of stars that was on the main street, and it reads, "A story of sacrifice daily is told by the stars of deep blue that are turning to gold. The stars in old glory are shining more bright because of gold stars that reflect new light. These stars of bright gold and now shine through our tears shall shine new glory all down through the years." So the U.S. Navy assigned the name the Hollisters to a 2,200-ton destroyer in honor of three gallant Robbinsdale brothers who were lost in World War II. Lyle Eugene Hollister, radio man second class, served in the Sicilian, Italian, and Salerno campaigns. In 1944, he was reported missing in action when his ship, the destroyer Pluckett, was attacked by enemy aircraft during the Anzio assault. Richard Jerome Hollister and William Howard Hollister enlisted and remained together during their short heroic naval career. In November 1943, their ship, the escort carrier Liscombe Bay, was torpedoed and sunk in the Gilbert Islands. William died of wounds received in action, and Richard was reported missing in action. The Hollisters, the destroyer was actually decommissioned in 1979, and 4 years later, the ship was transferred to Taiwan and renamed the Shaoyang. I don't know if that's still in service, but the Hollisters were remembered in Robbinsdale. Our mayor conducted a special memorial service, and we have some pictures of him presenting a check to the Hollister family that was just sort of a donations from the community, kind of like a GoFundMe to help them out after losing three sons in that war. On a lighter note, we had a drugstore on the main street that's fondly remembered called Henny's. And in 1945, a 160-pound four-point buck bounded into an open basement door of the Robbinsdale Pharmacy. Henny and a game warden named Ben Cohn, it's hard to believe this town has a game warden, but they went into the basement to get it out, and the Robbinsdale policeman, who was named Matt Spurzum, and Adrian Mattson, another member of the Robbinsdale police force, came to the rescue, but not before the deer had done $600 worth of damage by crashing into medicine cabinets. This story just gets told over and over again, and, you know, we've got deer in Robbinsdale to this day, but so if you own a business, just make sure that you keep your doors closed so that the deers don't bound in and start wrecking everything. So in 1946, you know, the war is over, and the school district is just growing by leaps and bounds. At that time, people were very concerned. Well, people were concerned about polio, and 44 cases had been reported in August, but they were also concerned about tuberculosis, and X-ray machines were provided from the new Victor Memorial Hospital, and another one came in on a truck from Minneapolis, and they set up shop outside the school, and they gave free chest X-rays, so they X-rayed 6,000 people. You know, the idea was to try and get a hold of some of those scary diseases. And, of course, we talked about Mayor Henry Ogham during the 1920s. In the 1940s, he was reelected again after he got out of Stillwater prison after serving a 10-year sentence for embezzlement. But he was forced to resign as mayor because he had transferred his residence to 1815 Morgan in North Minneapolis. And that wasn't going to fly. We couldn't have our mayor living in North Minneapolis. But he fought the decision, and he brought him to court. But the judge said, no, your residence is going to disqualify you. Of course, he'd been the village president before Robbinsdale Incorporated. So altogether, he was elected as mayor three times before he finally had to go again. Okay, so the Robbinsdale City Band really comes into their own in the 1940s. There's lots of volunteers that are willing and able to march up and down with them, and they get this emblem. It's the governor's favorite band. Every year they win the Aquitennial Marching Band Contest once the Aquitennial starts up. Paul Larson is the director from 1938 to 1942. The band cuts a couple albums that we have here, and then Larson again is the director from 1946 to 1947. And he really takes that band all across the country. They get to go to New York, and they perform at Radio City, and they're just considered the greatest marching band ever. And to this day, they are the oldest municipally supported marching band, although they don't march as much as they used to, but we still got the Robbinsdale City Band here. And during the late 1940s, a bunch of guys that had been building the Alaska Highway come back to Robbinsdale, And one of them opens up a little bar called the Alcan Club because it's the Alaska-Canada Highway, and that gets the great name. It was in a place that had been a bar before, owned by a guy whose name I just like to say, it was Truffy DeMars. And he'd owned this little brick building. It's about where Citizens State Bank is now. But the Alcan Club was a little classier than you might find beforehand in Robbinsdale. They had dances. Their advertising said that you could be, it was a three-time stop. You could, you know, stop in the afternoon and get a little something for lunch. You might stop again after work. And then later you could bring your wife back for dancing. So you could stop at this bar three times a day. And that was their whole advertising pitch. Or, you know, meet your friends, come to the Alcan Club. These guys that had got all sorts of building experience on that Alaska-Canadian highway, they approached the city and then the county, and they said, you know, we can clean up Crystal Lake. At that time, Crystal Lake almost dried up during the 1930s, but they, and it had started filling in with cattails. When they built Highway 52, they filled in some marshy portions of the lake and probably messed with the spring waters that were feeding it. But the guys from the Alcan Club got all sorts of dredging equipment, and they went to work, unfortunately, and this has been explained to me, that they punched a hole in the bottom of the lake and the lake started to drain out, and then they filled the hole. I don't know what sort of thing they could have punched a hole into. I don't think there's an aquifer down there, but they found something and the lake was draining away, and then they had to find something else and fill it. Needless to say, the lake has never been the same. But if you look at the maps, they filled in an area on the north side of the lake that almost creates Crystal Lake, almost has a heart shape that it didn't used to have before. They filled in all the area that's Lakeview Terrace Park now with the dredge that they took out of the lake. And the whole idea was just because the lake had too many cattails in it. Probably would have been a lot better off water quality-wise if they had just left it alone. But they seemed to have a good time doing it. And I guess, and the pitch was that you were going to be able to swim in the lake again. You were never able to swim in the lake again after that. It just didn't stay clean. A couple other big buildings get built in Robbinsdale in the late 1940s. The school district is just growing by leaps and bounds. Of course, the whole city's population is growing. And we build the biggest elementary school in the state, and that was Lee Elementary School. And this thing's at Lee Avenue and 36th. And I said it as Lee Avenue School because there's always some confusion. Who is Lee School named for? Lee School is named for Lee Avenue, just like Noble School is named for Noble Avenue. And if you go through Robbinsdale, we've got these alphabet streets, and you've got Lee, and then you got Major, you know, and then you got Noble. And when you think about it, Lee Major was a $6 million man. But they're not named after him either. So Lee School is not named after a person. It's just named after Lee Avenue. Glad we have that all cleared up now. So it's built in 1948, and it is just a huge school. And District 281, which it's called now, is just growing by leaps and bounds. Over the next 12 years, they're going to add 18 more elementary schools. They're going to add two other junior high schools, and they'll add two high schools. So Lee School gets built in 1948, and the next one that comes after that is Adair Elementary, which just sits right across the street from Robbinsdale in Crystal over on Adair Avenue. The other really fun thing about the late 1940s is we start getting into the era of juvenile delinquency when it's in all the papers, and what are we going to do about these kids? They're cruising through the neighborhoods on their bikes, and it seems like they're going too fast on those bikes. Well, in Robbinsdale, our police chief, Matt Spurzum, decides he will organize a youth bicycle patrol. And he gives these kids badges, and he gives them little hats and uniforms and puts bright colors on them. And the idea is they're going to go pull over their friends. Like maybe there's a kid who's giving another kid a buck. That's what we called it in Robbinsdale, when somebody jumped onto the back of your bike and you stood up and pedaled and they sat on the seat. We can't have any bucking in Robbinsdale. So they would pull you over and explain to you that you may not give anybody a buck, and I'm going to give you this little ticket. I don't know if there were any fines attached to the tickets, but it was a really ambitious program to make sure that our little juvenile delinquents were kept in line. And so the baby boom is in full swing as we get into the late 1940s, and Robbinsdale is kind of growing up a little bit. Our old village hall is still sitting there on the main street, but the building next to it has been leased by a Red Owl, which is sort of the beginning of the end for our village hall. over on Hubbard Avenue, we start building what's now the Hubbard Transit Center. But at that time, it was our police and fire station. It's a great big building, and it's just funny that it is still standing there. So I'm just going to drag us back to 1940 for the heck of it. You know, one of the things that was sad about Captain Billy passing away, although he hadn't been in town for a long time, he always kept Robbinsdale in his thoughts and in his magazines, and he would mention Robbinsdale from time to time. There might even be a little Easter egg in some of the Captain Marvels alluding to the high school here or something going on in Robbinsdale. There was a guy named Erskine Codwell, and he wrote about Captain Billy. And I just love this quote, that it's a rare thing for a dynamo of a man like Captain Billy Fawcett to leave behind a world so full of friends when he dies and so few, if any, detractors. And then Codwell thinks about it for a minute and he says, well, Captain Billy might have accumulated a few enemies had he lived out all the years that a man like him was entitled to. But he was greatly missed, and you know, we had Goodwill Days was our civic celebration, and it started to fund the water tower back in the 30s, but they kept it going in the early 1940s. This changes to Whiz Bang Days to honor Captain Billy's contribution to the town. Also in 1940, big event on April 10th, the second annual meeting of the Hennepin County Historical Society is held right here at the Congregational Church. And there's a banquet that's sponsored by the Lions Club. The Lions Club begins in 1940. Governor Harold Stassen was the main speaker. Donald Rubley, who was the first president of the Lions Club, came. H.R. Ambrose, who was one of the former mayors, comes. H.E. Westmoreland, the publisher of the Robbinsdale Post, and the president elect of the Lions Club, is there. And the Robbinsdale City Band, under the direction of Paul Larson, plays before the program. So I would have loved to have been there. I mean, I know, Crystal, you would have been there for the Hennepin County History Museum second annual meeting. I'm sure it was a big deal, and I'm a little bit sad that we missed it.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one. City every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and The Rounders.